Blair Palmer, and welcome to the Punks in Suits podcast, bringing the leadership thinking, beliefs, philosophies, and practices behind punky, startup-y, next-stage businesses to you, even if your company's not quite there yet. Hello, and welcome to episode 48 of the Punks in Suits podcast. I hope you are very well. Over the last few days, I've had quite a busy week, this week in fact, and I've been running a workshop for parents in a creative industry, helping them get clear on the changes they want to make in their businesses. All of them are freelance at what they do, and parenting, being a parent, or in fact looking after older relatives, can really have an impact in all professions, but particularly as a freelancer, particularly in creative industries that seem to be dominated by a lot of young people that don't have any responsibilities. So I've been helping them to think about the changes they want to make in their businesses and start finding ways to succeed in such a competitive environment, despite the challenges of having a young family or older relatives that they're taking care of. And it's been so rewarding that in actual fact, I'm going to use the content of that program that we've now tested and has had such a big impact on those individuals as the basis for an online program that I'll be launching sometime in 2018 for individuals who, like these guys over the last few days, want to make a really big change to the way they work or to the work they do. And I will tell you more about that in a few months once I'm really clear about how to describe it to you in such a way that will make you want to sign up to Sweet. Our next guest, by the way, nice link there. Our next guest is the kind of guy who does things toot sweet. He's Brian Falchuk, a coach, speaker, and ink columnist, and author of a new book called Do a Day. It's so interesting to speak to someone like Brian because change is a constant for most of us in business. But despite that, we still get really stuck in our ways. Maybe we become even more resistant to change because we've had so much of it thrust upon us that we're very reluctant to take any change that isn't absolutely essential and insisted upon by somebody else. Often, when you want to see change around you, the last place you look is in on yourself. But that's exactly where you need to start, of course. In fact, I go so far as to say that the only work that you can ever really do is the changes within yourself. Perhaps others will change in response, perhaps they won't, but any change that you want to see. I mean, this is one of the reasons that change initiatives go wrong, because people are trying to change everyone and everything other than themselves. It doesn't occur to them that maybe the change has to start within them. Brian is so energetic and inspirational and has some great stories to tell. So sit back, get yourselves somewhere comfortable, and I hope you enjoy my conversation with him. Let's go to that interview now. I'm very excited to welcome Brian to the show today. Hi, Brian.
Hi, thanks for having me, Blair.
Well, it's great, actually, because as ever, you being kind of falling into my path, very synchronicitous. There's a lot going on in my life, which I'm going to be revealing to my listeners. If I haven't done already when this goes out, I'll be revealing probably in the next couple of months. But there's a lot going on that requires quite a lot of action. Reading your book was really, really helpful in terms of me kind of structuring what it is that I need to do and just being clear that there might be some blocks that are less, not so much practical, but more baggage related. What I really want to say is it's extremely synchronous and absolutely perfect timing for me, and I hope it is for our listeners as well.
Well, it's great to hear. You know, the reason I wrote it is to have an impact and to help people figure things out and help change their lives.
Well, let's start with your story. What are some of the key pivotal moments in your life that brought you to the point of clarity about Do a Day?
Yeah, so there's two main things that I would share with people that if I had to ask what defined me, it's these two. One is a moment and one is a lot of moments. So let me start with a lot of moments. It's my backstory as a kid. So I was pretty normal little kid, skinny, active, whatever. And my parents, their marriage started to fall apart. when I was about 5 or 6. And I stopped being a skinny, active little kid and became a pretty obese little kid. Not so little anymore. And, you know, it didn't come from me eating too much and exercising too little. Those things were as much symptoms of my situation as was the obesity that ensued from them. So I was, you know, struggling for attention on one hand, and on the other hand that I certainly didn't understand was about struggling to understand how I was feeling. Little kids have just this innate need to feel secure and safe and taken care of, and I didn't. And I didn't know what to do with that. And I couldn't go to my parents because there were 4 of us, so they had their hands full, and they were getting divorced and arguing and all the issues that go with that. So, you know, I really had nowhere to go. And I turned to something that wasn't yelling, wasn't moving out, wasn't angry, wasn't judging me. You know, I had, as I said, 3 siblings, 1 close in age. So you can imagine how much fun we had together, sarcastically, you know, a lot of fighting. So food was just there and comfortable, and it never judged me or anything. And so I, you know, someone said, oh, slowly but surely. It was not slowly but surely. It was pretty rapid. You can see it's like from one photo of me to the next. It's like, what happened? This is a different person. And that continued on straight through high school. So it was, you know, it was something that defined me as a person. I was the fat kid. And that's how I felt in front of everyone. And there was a lot of, you know, you're lazy, you're slow. Why can't you do X, Y, Z? When it came to anything physical, it was just, you know, it was like I would find every excuse I could to try to get out of doing it. And if I had to do it, people would point and laugh, literally. So yeah, it was a rough childhood around my weight specifically. And I lost weight in high school thanks to a really caring, compassionate person in my high school who ran our physical education program, who just taught me a different relationship with exercise and wellness. It was the first time I wasn't being judged. He was like, oh, you know, let's see what you enjoy doing. And any accomplishment, I mean, the most minor accomplishment, he was right there with you telling you how great it was. And he had this way of never being negative. So if something was bad, I've literally to this day only heard him say the word bad once. He would just say it's not good. Like, it's just a minor thing, but you wouldn't hear. And of course, like, not is a negative word, but bigger, more powerful words, he would never use the negative form of them. And it's just the most beautiful thing to interact with him. And we've stayed very close and in touch. And I mentioned him in the book. But that was a really pivotal thing for me because it introduced me to being physical and being successful for the first time in my life. Wow. So that was huge. Now, unfortunately, because I just dealt with the physical side and that whole weight loss journey was about how people perceived me, whether in actuality or in my head, you know, that I was the fat kid and I didn't want to be that anymore. So my weight loss was because I didn't want to be looked at as that. It wasn't because I dealt with the underlying emotional anxiety type issues that actually drove me to gain weight in the first place. So I did keep the weight off for a while, but that was really due to willpower. And willpower has a time limit generally, especially if the underlying causes are still there. So, you know, enter my mid-20s, things started to change and I started to put weight back on. Now, I never got up to, I was about 100 pounds overweight originally. I never got back to that place. I gained about half of it back. And I just looked, I always say, I just looked American. I didn't really look different from anybody else. But the reality is I was overweight and I wasn't healthy. And more importantly, I hadn't dealt with the reasons why I was overweight in the first place. So I was depressed. I was not the greatest person to be around too often. And I was just headed in more of that direction instead of the opposite direction. And that's where the second point in my life that the really pivotal moment came in. And I was 32. It was 2011. My wife was, she had been a stay-at-home mom, and she had suddenly fallen victim to a really an all-encompassing chronic illness that she had dealt with her whole life, but we didn't know what it was. It was always like, oh, you've got the flu or you've got a 24-hour bug or whatever. And it would pass after a day or two and move on. Well, this time it didn't pass. We had a son, he was 2, and the stay-at-home mom suddenly couldn't take care of him anymore. and it got to the point where she couldn't even get out of bed. So she was losing about 2 pounds a day. No one knew what was going on. No one knew how to stop it. Her doctors were not just not helping her, but really shaming her about it. You know, it's in your head, or you're just depressed. There's nothing wrong with you. And it's like, no, there's clearly something wrong with her.
I love
you gotta help.
Sorry to interrupt, Brian, but I love when people say you're just depressed.
Yeah.
As if just depressed. Oh,
well. If I've learned anything.
All right.
Yeah. When you hear the word just, hang on. Because
yeah.
What's about to come is no good. You know, when people are like, oh, can't you just do X, Y, Z? Or can't we just, you know, my son's like, can we just buy this? I'm like, no, dude, that costs money. Like, you gotta, when you hear the word just, watch out. And that was the case here. And you know what? If you were bedridden and your life was no longer one you could participate in, how would you feel? Of course she was depressed, but she wasn't before. You know, and so it was just this like, and sorry, if she is depressed, what are you doing about that? Because just making her feel bad doesn't really help the situation, does it?
Probably the absolute opposite of what the situation.
So there was a specific moment that summer. It was June 30th, 2011. I got a call from her primary care physician who told me he was going on vacation for 6 weeks. And he just wanted to let us know and let's check in when he's back. And I said, there's not going to be a check-in when you're back. She's not going to make it 6 more weeks. She couldn't get out of bed anymore. She was down to just over 100 pounds, which is far too light for her. And it's not stopping. So you do the math. She's not going to make it. And all he had to say was, okay, just take her to the ER then if there's a problem. I was like, are you kidding me? Like this woman is really just starting her whole life. She's dying. And your answer is, oh, just take her to the ER? Like, why don't you care more? And that was when it all hit me. That's when the work I hadn't done on myself and the cost of it really hit me, because I looked at my son, who was looking at her when I hung up that phone call, just looking at his mother, and you know, she had been fully engaged in his life, and now she wasn't. I had been working full-time, and I was lucky enough to be able to work from home through this situation. I had a boss who was understanding about it. So all of a sudden, mommy's not available and daddy's home all the time. And, you know, it's confusing and it's scary. And I just looked at, you know, aside from whatever's happening with her, what am I for him? You know, am I the father he needs and deserves, especially because there's a good chance I'm going to be his only parent. So what am I doing as his dad? And he deserves so much better. You know, I was not the man he needed me to be. I wasn't engaging with him. I felt too much pressure and anxiety and all of the what ifs that were hitting me, that it's like, daddy, can you play? No, I can't play with you. I have to do this, or I have to do that. Or it's like, no, I have to go to work, or I have to make this for mommy, or I have to do the laundry, or, and, you know, he's two. Like he just wanted me to play with him. And that's such a basic, like, and it took me right back to my childhood. So that brought a lot of clarity for me of who I needed to be for him, for myself. I was saying to someone yesterday, it's like my wife and son were the family and I was an employee. Right. And that's not on them. That's on me. I was not a part of that family. I was just the guy who came in and did stuff there. And that is like, who wants their, it's one thing for work. It's another thing for your life, you know, and I mean your home life, your family, all of that, for you to be an employee of it. And that is just absolutely not how I want to live. And that was a light bulb moment for me. So when I woke up July 1st, the next morning, everything changed. And that's when Do A Day really began.
So what happened after that? What did Do A Day actually then promote in you? How did it change your circumstances and those of your family?
Yeah, so when I woke up the next morning, I felt a sense of purpose and direction that I literally had never felt in my life. That idea of being an employee or just sort of going through the motions, that's really what my whole life was. You did what you have to do, what you're obligated to do, or what people expect of you, and that's that. But what about you? And what about your why? So I had this feeling of that. And a lot of it was tied to my feelings around my son and who I saw myself as in life, not about how people looked at me, how I looked at myself. And what I realized is I didn't value myself. You know, no one else was calling me the fat kid anymore, but I was. So I still looked at myself as physically incapable, as a failure, as slow, lazy, you know, all those things. And I was busting my hump to overcome that, but not for anyone else's perception, for my own. And that's the clarity I had, is like, you know, people say, well, you're talking about your son and your motivation needs to be about you. And I'm like, it's my son was sort of the vessel for me to see it. And I wasn't the man I wanted to be in my own life. So that next morning, it started with the first thing I did every morning was I exercised. And I had been doing it really mindlessly for years. And that's why my weight had crept up. It was like there was no point to the exercise. I get on the machine, I block the screen with a magazine or something. 30 minutes later, it's beeping because it's done. And oh, I didn't even realize it just worked out. So I didn't block the screen. I made a conscious choice. Like, I was like, I'm going to have to do things. And I said that word do. If I want this to change, it's not just going to change because I push myself. So I chose not to cover the screen. I chose to use an interval program. And when the intervals hit, I would really push myself. And I was soaked with sweat at the end of the exercise. I was exhausted, but I had this huge smile on my face because it's not just that I was tired, but felt good. I had that endorphin rush, but I felt accomplished. And that's a really powerful feeling. It's like, you know, I can let it just be about that, or I can broaden this out. And I mean, this is literally the thought process that first morning. So I wrote down what I did on the elliptical that morning. I weighed myself. I wrote down those numbers. And I said, you know, here are some things today that I know I can do differently. And this was the first one. There are other things in my life that weren't working right. And later that day, I started to have a conversation with my wife that she had been trying to have with me for a while. And I just fought because of every excuse under the sun about needing to talk to someone about what I'm feeling. And, you know, that was before she got sick. And you add in, you know, this whole new nuance of potentially being a single father and, you know, spouses face losing their spouses. That's the normal part of life, but it usually doesn't come when you're in your early 30s, just starting out. So that was a whole new set of emotions I had never even contemplated or prepared for. I mean, not that you really can, but certainly that hit me out of the blue in a way that I had no idea or no tools with how to deal with. And every time she was like, you really should talk to someone, or I got the notion of it, it was like, but I don't have the time for that. I have to do all these other things, and it's not about me, and we can't spend the money on this. We have to spend it on that. And I just realized, if I don't care for myself, I can't care for anybody else because I'm breaking. And there's a limit to that. And that's why I say willpower has a limit. You can only go so far before you've changed the mechanisms that sustain automatically. You can't just keep butting your head against the wall. Eventually your head just bleeds. The wall will not give. So that was one of the things, you know, I had that conversation with her that day and researched some people and I found someone later that week and I set up an appointment and somehow we made it work and the house didn't fall over and no one starved to death. And like all the things I had been telling myself, all these what ifs in the future that were causing me via anxiety not to take the action I needed to take, they didn't materialize. And that's a really key piece of Do-A-Day. So much of it is around the actions we take right now, free of the burden of either yesterday or tomorrow. And that's why it's a day. It's a single day. And it's not that's like, that's all you have to do and everything's done. But each day is its own day. It's never the future. It's always just today. And it's never the past. So if you're afraid of, well, if I do this, what'll happen then? And what about this? What about that? You're probably not putting any weight on any of the positive outcomes. You're just looking at the negatives. And when you make decisions today based on that anxiety, that insecurity, I guarantee you, you're making really bad decisions. And of course, most of them don't play out, especially if you take that better path. So all the fall apart notions I had didn't happen, or most of them didn't happen because I was doing things better and differently and more positively. And the stuff that happened, I'm here talking to you today. So how bad could it really have been? And that's the thing, you know, we don't give ourselves credit. Like we've been through so much in life, everyone, I don't care what your life situation is. You've been through so much. Clearly you've gotten through it. Why do you think you can't get through the next thing that you face? So those are the realizations that hit me that first week, but starting that first day.
A lot of the people that I work with are stuck. they are, and that's of course why they would want to work with someone. It's a very reasonable thing to do in that moment, is to seek help and to seek support, which is exactly what you did. There's something about that stuckness which is really relevant to what you just said, which is the reason that we get stuck, all of us, is that we are attached to the past and the future.
Yeah.
And that when you have to deal with every single possible scenario of the future, plus all the lessons, in inverted commas, of the past, then of course you cannot make a decision.
Yeah.
You are paralyzed. But if you can switch off from those two things and focus entirely on what is the next right thing to do, given where I am today, then at least you'll do something.
Yeah.
And as your story is the testament to this, by doing something, something changes. And then you know at least what, you've narrowed down a lot of scenarios then, because
yeah,
a lot of them that you would have played with are now irrelevant because of what's happened as a result of this one action.
Exactly. Exactly. And the what that we do, I very much like to see people set specific goals. We know what those areas in our lives are that we want to do a bit better in, or much better in. So choose those, because otherwise you just sort of, you go back to this mindless, like, wake up, do whatever's in front of you, go to bed. You know, you don't, like, what's your purpose? Where are you heading in that? And whether it's work, family, health and wellness, financial goals, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. The path is still the same. You need to have some direction, because otherwise, what are you pointing yourself towards? And you can't really live a mindful life if you have no direction.
Yeah. So let's talk about that then, because that for me is the piece that enables you, as you've just said, to make wise choices and conscious choices that take you towards your purpose in life, as opposed to just convenient or short-term deviation of discomfort.
Yeah.
So how do you, I mean, it sounds like quite a kind of ridiculous question when people say, well, what is the meaning of life for me? Why am I actually here? What's my calling? But you have some questions in the book to help people to establish what their values are. Can you go through that a little bit and just explain how, because it isn't something you get in one moment or in one day about this, but there are some questions you can ask yourself to start to get clarity.
Yeah. And I would say, as a precursor to that, there's a leveling of the playing field that's needed. And that's the word self-compassion or self-love. Someone said, oh, self-care. It's not self-care. It's actually much more powerful than that. Self-care is good enough. This is about something bigger. Is you have to allow for yourself to be good enough, worthy, capable, all of those things. Because if you don't, none of the rest of what we're going to talk about matters. If that tape recorder in your head is still telling you, you can't, you don't deserve it. Someone I am coaching yesterday on a call with her, she's telling me she got a job offer totally out of the blue, blown away. And she's very caught on how, like, she doesn't understand why. And why are they so interested in her? And I'm like, this is a good thing. And you're trying to say why you don't deserve it. You know, and you do, and they see that. And you got to change the way that you're looking at this. Is she's kind of saying, like, at some point they'll figure out they made a mistake, you know, or what's wrong with them if they would want me, which is it's a sad and self-compassionless way of looking at it. So first and foremost, you have to be self-compassionate. And there are things you can do to get better at that, because it's something, honestly, we all struggle with. Even people who appear egotistical, I guarantee you, under the surface, there's a recording in their head that's telling them that they're not good enough.
Yeah. And what I've noticed is that it's very often the people who completely deny that they have any of that, that are the most burdened by it. So it's so deep that they don't even know that it's there. People who've been on a personal development journey for a while or a lifetime make their living out of it. It bothers us more because we're hyper aware of the dialogue that's going on all the time. But at least we know it's there. And once you're aware of it, then you can
then you can do something. So maybe before we actually talk about the values and how you work out what this bigger picture is that you're driving towards, how do you help people with that negative inner voice?
Yeah, so one of the things that I do is I take people back in time when they're stuck on everything that they're horrible at today, and they just cannot see, you know, this person, as an example, couldn't see anything of value in her current situation. And so I said, well, let's step back. Did you go to college? Yes. How were your grades? Well, I got mostly A's. I had a 3.8 something GPA. I said, okay, that's a really good GPA. Really good GPA. Was your school hard? Well, some people think so. Other people don't. I'm like, was it a rigorous program? Did you have to work hard? Yeah. And you got good results. Yes. But that's, wait. Don't say but. Just, did you get good results? You said yes. Stop there. You need to like notice the achievement and just stop with the noticing of it. Allow for the achievement to be a thing in and of itself before you discredit it. You got a job offer. Yeah, but no, you got a job offer, period, full stop. It doesn't matter if you want the job. It doesn't matter if it's a good job or whatever. Someone just evaluated you and thought, this is what we need for what we're trying to achieve. Nothing else about it matters. Just allow for that. Do you have friends? Yeah, I have friends. Do you have a lot of friends or a few friends? Actually, it doesn't matter if you have 2 or 200. She's like, no, I probably have 10 really close friends that I see regularly. Okay, so that means 10 people who you were not born into a family with, didn't get married and have you. So no one who was forced to be with you. 10 people actively, regularly choose that you're a great person who they want to spend time with. Do they go to you for advice? Yeah, they always come to me. Okay. Those are people who are choosing to turn to you because the way you look at things resonates and helps them. Yeah, but no. Just repeat that back to me. So it's like as soon as it's like we said with the word just, the word but is the other one. As soon as you get to the word but, back up a few seconds and stop there and just like let it sink in. When I had started running in 2012, and I hated running, and I don't use that word often, I genuinely hated running as a kid. You know, being really obese, it's not a surprise. In summer camp as a kid, the counselors pitted all of the fattest kids in camp against each other in it was an 880-yard dash. So I don't know, somewhere around 800 meters. I finished. I don't know what place I finished in. And as soon as I finished, I hit the tarmac on the track, passed out. It was about 105 degrees, pure humidity. I don't know what that is in Celsius, but a lot, like 40 something. I woke up in the lake. They had taken me down to the lake to revive me because I had overheated. And you know, when I said people pointing and laughing, the entire camp, so 200 something kids were pointing and laughing at all of us. So that was what running was to me. So I didn't run. Fast forward to 2012, I got into running. And I remember someone asked me about, you know, like, I've seen you lose all this weight. What do you do for working out? And I just let it slip. I said, oh, I'm a runner. And I was alone in my basement on the phone when I said that. And I literally looked left and looked right as if like, did someone just see me say that? Someone's going to catch me. And it just like, it hit me in that moment, how ridiculous that was, you know, and I got into this with someone else. He's like, well, I haven't run this far. I said, wait, what do you do with your feet? I run. Okay. Do you know what someone who runs is? They're a runner. It doesn't matter if you're making your living from it or you're the fastest person or the slowest person. If you run, you're a runner. Can you speak? Yes. You're a talker. Why is it any different with anything else? So just like allow. It's such a simple word, but just allow for those achievements to actually be a thing. And one thing I always tell people is success begets success. So the more wins you have, the more wins you have. The more you allow for these little good bits about yourself to exist without discrediting them, it starts to move. It starts to move you. But it takes some time and it takes conscious effort because that butt soundtrack is playing the whole time. You have to choose to stop it, hit stop, and just reflect for a minute. Yeah, I did this. Simple as that. But it takes time.
It's a lovely idea, this making a sort of judgment-free inventory of all of your achievements and qualities and just leaving it there, even if it doesn't feel like when you write it down, you don't feel joyful and fulfilled when you look at it, the habit of doing it, then start to build up, doesn't it, into a kind of big bag of stuff that you know you can draw on when you need it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And there's also the thing, I mean, this new project of mine, which I'm being very secretive about, I'm not being that secretive, I've been telling quite a lot of people. And I've been very clear that this is a little baby. Mm-hmm. What I don't need right now is a lot of jokes, cynicism, skepticism, critique. What I'm looking for is enthusiastic support for the idea, belief in me and my ability to pull it off. And if there are things I still need to think about because there's holes in the plan, will you ask me those questions?
Yeah.
What I don't need is a lot of people saying, that's mad. What are you going to do if this happens? What will you do if that happens? And the reason for that is that will feed any negativity and fears of mine. And unfortunately, we live in a society, and I'm thinking about the workplace in particular, where there's quite a lot of credit given to those people who are good at spotting a flaw in a plan.
Yeah.
You know, what is feedback? Feedback is an opportunity to point out all the flaws in my team. You know, meetings are an opportunity to lay into somebody's idea and tell them why it isn't going to work. But the people that are the best at critiquing an idea are the ones that are given a lot of status in the organization.
Yeah.
So we live in this world where that is kind of the culture. And I think you have to, when you're going through this process of doing the judgment-free inventory and building yourself back up from the inside, you have to surround yourself with people who are going to just reinforce that and seal this stuff already and can remind you about it.
Yeah. Look, I was a management consultant for 6 years. My job was to find problems and fix them. That's what I was rewarded on. And I've been brought into 3 other jobs outside of consulting to be a fixer. That's who I am. And it goes back to my childhood, is I was a fixer, and it's who my father is. There were issues after the divorce financially and all that, where things, you know, not everything was happening in the way it should. So I just jumped in, and I learned a lot of self-care, and I learned a lot of self-reliance. But my whole life, I've been programmed as and rewarded for being a fixer. And that means you find the flaws and you root them out. And I'm not alone, as you say. I mean, that is the way that so many businesses work right now. Even startups, it's about find a hole, like find something people aren't doing right now or aren't doing well, and come up with a better answer. And that's not a bad thing, but it is about, you know, look for the gaps in delivery. Where are people failing, and do better than them? So yeah, we are rewarded overall, and we treat our personal relationships that way too. We get very critical with people. And the amount of hatred on the internet, it's absurd, because we're all trained to be that way. And of course, there's a whole, you know, that it's like a badge of honor how little you sleep or how overworked you are. It's, you know, someone's like, oh, they slept 4 hours last night. 4 hours? What are you, a prince? Like, I slept 2 hours. And you're like, oh, I was at work till 10. 10? I was at work till 12. It's like, why are you proud of that? Your life is miserable. Why are you, you know, dancing around like that's a good thing? We're so programmed in this negativity cycle, and we need to break from that.
And I think that perfectly links us back to this question of values and what your overall driver is. What matters to you? If nothing else, what would be the things that you live for?
Yeah.
And what you're describing, what I'm describing, is based very much on a set of societal values, which may not be our own personal ones. So things like, well, the society values people with a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The society values people with a lot of money. The society values people who sacrifice their lives for their work.
Yeah.
But individuals don't really thrive on that. We thrive on something that is much more about our meaning and our purpose, and a sense of calling or contribution, that if we can connect into that and focus on that, some of the other stuff, like your job title and your bonus package and where you decide to go on holiday, all of that becomes not a driving factor in your decision making, because the other stuff is what's guiding you. So let's go into that then. How do you know? Because we're so disconnected from that, right?
How do you know who the drivers are? So that's probably the hardest part of the work that I do with individuals, is figuring out their why, their deep motivation, because most people are so detached from it. And I say in a kind of perverse way, I was lucky to have the clarity brought to me, and I didn't figure it all out in that moment, but the path, I was forced so far down the path that I got there. One of the first podcasts I did was with a military guy who had been blown out of his vehicle on the side of a road in Afghanistan. And that, you know, that was another, like, everything becomes clear to you in those kinds of moments. But most people don't have that. Most people haven't had a gun staring at them in the face, you know? So a lot of people come to me and they say, well, I can't figure it out because I haven't been through that. I haven't had one of these shock moments. You can, but you have to be willing to do a lot of introspection. And you have to be willing to get a bit uncomfortable with yourself and dig up things that you've probably been aware of subconsciously, but not consciously, for a long time. And myself included in that. And I continue to discover things every day. And some of them are hard, and some of them are easy, and some of them are fantastic that I figured it out. And some of them bring up a lot of emotion that needs to be worked through. And that's all okay. And it's what will make me a better person ultimately. So I ask myself a number of questions, and I pose them in the book. There's sort of four key questions. I can boil them all down. You've hinted at it, but it's really just, what will you always care about no matter what? Really simple question, almost impossible to answer, because, and this is where being a coach comes in, is I get really annoying and just keep asking people why. So they'll give me an answer and I'll say, well, why? And my point in asking that is not to be a pain. It's to push them further, because they're probably at too high of a level and haven't really gotten down to the nitty gritty. And I mean, myself as an example, when I say, you know, it's my son, and actually I have some rules about motivation, that it should be internal to you, intrinsic within you, not something external, not about people looking at me as the fat kid. That's why that didn't work. Not about beach season or about that promotion or buying this house or that car or whatever, because what happens once you get or don't get those things? When beach season's over, or your ex's wedding that you were invited to that you want to make them jealous at, or your high school reunion, whatever, when that's over, what's pushing you anymore? So that's not good enough. So when I say it's my son, that's external to me. And the reality is, as a parent, it's not as external to me as, you know, something material is, or people judging me as fat. The connection to your child is much more inside of you than out, but it's a fair point. So it's not as simple as my son. You know, I talked about this before. This is actually about how I feel as a father, as a man, as a husband, as a member of life, and that I'm not a member of my own life. You know, and that's what ultimately I got down to. And my son was just this really clear way of looking at it. I was looking at my relationship to him, and a big piece of that is who I am to him, the role model I am, the way I'm living my life. And that's the key thing I started to realize. It's the way I'm living my life and how he's able to perceive that and the impact on him. And I wasn't happy with that, because I wasn't living my life the way I had wished to. And I had blamed everything else for it. Someone's doing this to me. Why is my wife sick? Why is this person at work doing what they're doing? Why is this political game playing out? Why didn't I get a bigger bonus? Why did my car break down? Whatever it is. Why did I grow up with the situation I grew up with? Well, look, I did. None of that is in my control. All of the response to it is. And it's, some people get really offended by that. Is that it's a choice to be upset about something. It's like, I didn't choose to lose my job. No, you didn't. And that sucks. But what you do in response to it is your choice. And until you see that, you're going to be stuck unemployed. You know, what you do in response to someone leaving you or whatever other terrible situation, that is your choice. And your situation will not change unless you choose to change it. Doesn't mean it's easy, It doesn't mean it isn't painful, but you've got to make those choices for yourself. So it's having the connection to that purpose, you know, and how I feel about myself. I mean, it comes right back to that self-love point. I didn't have self-love. So until I had that, I didn't really understand the point of any of it. And now I come from a very different place. Doesn't mean it's perfect. Doesn't mean I'm perfect. Doesn't mean I'm always happy. It doesn't mean I'm always, you know, the best person to be around. I'm human and I have moments and I have things that I react to in ways that I wish I didn't. But what I don't do is throw everything away because of that. So if I yelled at someone, if I yelled at my son, which I don't generally yell at him, but let's just say I did, I don't then say I'm a terrible parent and I yell at my kid. I yelled at him in a moment for a reason. It wasn't the best choice. I could have done differently. But that doesn't mean I'm going to yell at him every time going forward if I choose not to. So just because you messed up, if you want to call it that, understand why. This isn't a get out of jail free card. Understand why and make a different decision next time because of your purpose.
You said that the criteria must include the motivation being intrinsic. What else is important about that?
Yeah. So I think it needs to be something really profound. And, you know, that's a subjective word, but I think we can generally understand when something's bigger versus smaller. And a lot of these points tie together. So another thing I say is non-material. I don't think a great example is being CEO. Why do you want to be CEO? Let's talk motivation, the word why. Do you want to be CEO because CEOs are generally well-paid? Do you want to be CEO because that title is universally recognized and respected in a way that vice president maybe isn't, because you've got companies where, you know, you start right out of college as a vice president. And you've got others where it's like there's one vice president and it's the number two to the president. So, you know, CEO is a powerful title and they're well paid. Is that why you want it? Well, you know, for someone who says that to me, because I want people to respect me, why? And why do you want to be that well paid? You're not, like, these aren't meaningful things that will endure, because what happens once you get the job? Because I guarantee you, if you go from making $100,000 a year to $500,000 a year, fantastic. You're making a ton of money. You're going to want more. So what is it about being CEO? And then you get into, well, actually, what I really love to do is lead. I want to lead people. I want to lead an organization. I want to change things. I want to have an impact in moving an entire space forward. Right now, we're starting to get at something more profound. You can see the difference is like, I want to make X dollars a year and I want people to quiver when I walk into the room because the CEO's here. So everyone hush up. Like, that's not motivation. But having an impact, that starts to get at something much more profound. And then what we need to do is explore why you want to have that impact. What is it about having an impact that matters to you? Because we're going to bring it back to you and your feeling, your understanding, and what you're seeking in your life. Not just impact is what happens to others, which is a good thing, not against that. But I want to understand how it makes you feel. And that's the series of whys. You know, it's like, because I want to be CEO. That's my motivation. I want to do better at work because I want to be CEO. Okay, why do you want to be CEO? Because I want to change things. I want to do better. I see so much opportunity. We're not seizing on it. And I want to be able to grab that and move everyone's life forward because it's better for everybody, including our customers. That's beautiful. Tell me why. You know, we keep digging on it. There's a notion in Lean, in the operations approach of Lean, called the five whys. And it's that with everything you find, you keep asking why five times and you get to the root cause of the problem. It's about pointing out problems. Whether it's four or five or six or whatever isn't really relevant. The exercise is what's key, is whatever you've found on the surface, that's not it. You have to keep digging. So it's easy to have a coach do that for you. It's harder to do it for yourself. But one way or the other, you need to push beyond your first level answer and really get down it. And often, actually, people end up crying when they get to the root of it. And that can make for some awkward meetings, but that's when you know you've gotten there. It's like when people are like, time out, I need a minute. And you see like their eyes have welled up. It's like, we have found something. And a minute ago, you were talking about you want to make 500 grand a year. Like, this is so profoundly different. So these are the things that I push on.
It's an amazing moment that happens every now and again when you go through that process, and you do have this, it almost feels as though, to me, like you land on solid ground.
So yeah.
Digging away. You keep thinking you're there. You keep thinking, okay, I'll hold, you know, I'll stick with this one. This is a good one. And then your coach digs away. And then you find this kind of really hard level ground.
Yeah.
And that's the place where, okay, that's where it is for me. The only caveat to that is, I think it's not a one-time thing. So you think you found level ground, and you go as deep as you can go for now. And that's exactly where you need to be. And then a few months, a few years later, you think, oh, hang on a minute. I need to go deeper and deeper and find the next strata, in a way, solidity.
Yeah, it's self-exploration, and that cannot stop. So what I'm trying to do is start people on a journey for themselves. I don't change lives. I help people try to change their own lives. And it's lives. It's not right now. So this is about a lifetime of change. And let's be honest. I mean, you know, I said it was about my son in that moment. It took me a few years to really pick. I mean, it probably actually took me writing this book and doing interviews like this before I even turned back on myself and said, wait a second, am I even following the rules that I've set myself? Am I at that base level that I'm trying to help other people get to? So that's 6.5 years on. For some people, it is that you need time and you need to start living through it to figure out deeper and deeper. And that's great. Go on that journey. For others, your life changes. You know what? When I've worked with people in their 20s and I've worked with people in their 50s, both for career reasons, it's night and day why we're talking. And a lot of people that I found in your late 20s, you got into some job out of college or university, and you're like 28, and you're like, what am I doing? How did I end up here? It's like, because who were you when you were 21 or 22 years old? Did you have a clue? Did you understand? It's like, ooh, that's a job, and I need to get a job, and that sounds really good, and you don't know anything about anything. I said, as a consultant, we'd recruit people and talk about the travel. The only travel they'd done is to, like, Mexico and, you know, vacations. Living out of a suitcase in the middle of nowhere is not the same thing as going on vacation, but they don't know that. So you have this realization because you've changed dramatically. Maybe you're married now. Maybe there's a kid on the way. Maybe you're a homeowner. I mean, this is night and day from eating ice cream and burritos in college. Like, it's a very, so you're a totally different person. Your journey, your understanding of motivation, you probably weren't ready for it the first time around. I wasn't. That's why I gained the weight back. So you're at a different place. You're going through that. This guy I worked with in his late 50s, he got into a career track straight out of undergrad. He had 30 something years of success, and things fell apart. Not because of anything he did, it was something internal to the company he was at. But he woke up and he had no clue who he was or why he was, because he had never had to go through that. So it is a lifelong thing. You do need to reevaluate. And his reasons at the original point when he started his career were totally different now. He and his wife were empty nesters. They had two adult children. That's a little bit different than when he was 22. So of course his motivations are different. His health was in a different place. He was a collegiate athlete and now he's a diabetic. So there's, you know, everything is different in his life. You cannot expect this to be a one-time exercise. And frankly, I wouldn't want it to be, because once you get into it, it's a beautiful thing what you start to unlock. So you should want to continue on that path and stay motivated.
And how do you know that you're at the moment to do this? Because there are plenty of people who would rather avoid asking themselves these kind of questions. I mean, unfortunately, it does, as soon as you start doing it, it does throw up some stuff about you and about your choices that in some ways you were better off not knowing. You know, you feel like that. And even for myself, I will resist looking at that stuff for a while until the comfort of my current situation gets such that I'm forced to confront it and go into that horrible, messy, bad decisions that maybe I've made, or just ways that I've got myself into a series of habits that don't serve me. It does take, certainly for me, and I, you know, I'm working with people on change all the time and I'm talking about change, but still I know I don't change easily. I need it to be quite a significant level of discomfort. Mm. What you found as well, that it does require the status quo being so uncomfortable that actually any kind of change, even looking at stuff that is horrible to look at, is better than doing nothing at all.
Yeah, I think it varies by people. Most of the people who I work with have had some major point of being stuck or really unhappy about something. So there's been a pivot where they've said, I need help. And oftentimes it does take that, at least to reach out and be willing to pay and make time and all that, which I'm biased, but I think that's usually the best path, even if it's only two sessions to get you going on your way, or one or whatever. But usually you need someone to help kick you. For the people who don't reach out, you know, those I've talked to, it's been more of, they've sort of recognized like, I'm not quite where I want to be, or maybe it's for a positive reason. I mean, we are talking a lot about pain and, you know, wanting to do better. There's people who are, seem to be doing fine, but recognize they still want more. Maybe they've seen something that sparked that in them. I mean, part of my journey, once I got over the really serious stuff, a lot of the things I have achieved, there's been no like, this isn't right and I need to do better. It's been like, wow, that would be amazing. I'd love to go for that. That's why I did a marathon. That's why I became a vegan. That's why I wrote my book. There are things I've gone after that it didn't take pain. It didn't take that really difficult moment, but it took me seeing something that interested me so much. And I was like, that's something I would love to achieve for myself. And, you know, some people are lucky that they can see the world that way and be attracted to that and recognize like, so that means I'm gonna have to do some things. I think for a lot of people, it does take having that particular moment, lose a job, lose a family member, whatever it is, something that sparks them to say, I can't keep doing this. And I will say a lot of what people dig up, I'm finding this very commonly, is some form of abuse in their early days, physical, sexual, emotional, whatever. And they may not even be framing it that way. It could just be that, you know, their parent never told them they loved them. That is a form of abuse. And that does have an impact on how you look at yourself, how you look at others, your ability to trust, you know, all of that. It's been interesting to me how frequent that theme comes out. And that's a really hard thing to deal with and a really hard thing to face. And they probably knew it to begin with, but haven't been dealing with it. So yeah, it can be a really, really difficult journey to go on that has some pretty tough moments. But I will say, suppressing and glazing over for the rest of your life, that does not sound interesting. Or accommodating. You know, it's like, why wouldn't you, like, yes, it could be painful, but let's deal with it so you can actually get to live your life free of these things for a change. Because you are a prisoner to it unless you unlock it.
And you do see people doing amazing things. I think in the past, you know, people have always done amazing things, of course, but in the past, if you didn't personally know someone in your circle who had started their own business or gone traveling, you know, in a minivan for a year, or run a marathon or done an Ironman, if you didn't personally know anyone, you would think no one really did it.
Yeah.
Because today with social media, you can see
everyone's doing it.
Some people are faking it, but you know, people are doing amazing things. And sometimes you see something that someone's doing and it triggers in you sometimes a horrible feeling of that's not fair, well, how come they get to and I don't, but sometimes a really inspirational feeling of, hang on a minute, if they can, I can. Mm-hmm. But if you have really either of those, so if you have this inspirational, oh my God, if they can, I can, then it's kind of, why not? You can. And yeah. If you have this awful feeling of, that's not fair, that's not right, why should they be able to and I can't, then that's also a moment to say, why do I hate it so much? Why am I so judgmental about it? Is it because ultimately I would love to and somehow I feel that I can't? Because
yes, jealousy.
Yeah, it's jealousy.
Yeah.
You know, I've been single for long periods of my life, and I can remember in my 20s, being single in my 20s, and seeing couples cuddling and holding hands on the tube and hating them.
Yeah.
It was a horrible feeling. And when I noticed that I was just giving them the evil eyes of, you know, don't throw your relationship in me, in my face, I realized, you know, I have to do something about this, because this is, those people are happy.
Yeah.
And I hate them. So yeah. I had to do something. And actually, it was one of the things that triggered me into looking at personal development and then becoming a coach in the first place, this terrible feeling. So I know not everyone has that, and people... I found on my own journey that people have been so enthusiastic and so kind, and that it's inspired people rather than making people jealous. But I think either of those are moments to say, maybe it's time for me to shake something up and change something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I completely agree. It is interesting how a lot of us, probably all of us, at least at some point in our lives, feel that way about something that is better than where we're at. And some of us catch it in the moment. And others latch onto it. It's so interesting for me as a father of a young child to watch in the schoolyard how that plays out. You know, divorce is very common. So seeing, we had an issue with a bully in my son's class. His parents were getting divorced. My sons are not, you know. My son does really well in school. He's just kind of friendly and likes everybody. And this little boy had a lot of angst. And he took it out on my son, because it's this comparison of like, it's all easy for you. So there's a lot of, you know, making fun of him and just being generally mean. And, I went and talked to the father in this case. I see, I get it. I was him. I fully understand it. He needs help, because just because he's in a bad place doesn't mean my son needs to be as well. And, you know, that could have gone a number of different ways. Luckily the father was like, you're absolutely right. And we've really been struggling with this. He says he's fine, but we don't think he is. And we want to support him. And, you know, luckily the two parents that were splitting up had a good interworking as parents, which is great. That helps. But that's a really tough thing. And you see it, kids are probably a better way to look at it, because they don't hide it. You know, it's not going on inside. Like, they act out, unfortunately, but it brings it all front and center, is jealousy, envy, discomfort with yourself. It goes right back to that self-love point, leads us to feel a certain way about those who we perceive not to be in the same situation. And I love to remind people, the grass isn't green anywhere, my friends. You know, my son may look like everything's perfect. I travel incessantly for work, so he doesn't see me as much as he should. You know, he almost lost his mother, and he was old enough to understand that. So he gets very uncomfortable when she's unwell, and he can't really get in touch with why. You know, there's lots of issues there that other people may just look and be like, oh, he's got it easy, his perfect family. No, you know what? Nothing is easy. It's just that you're perceiving it to be. Everyone has struggles, and it's not a competition. It's not my life's better than yours and yours is worse than mine or what. It's all relative to ourselves. But we project our pain out on those we think aren't having it. And we don't want them to be in that good place. It's just not right.
I think one of the things that I've learned to say, and that I've been raising with clients as well, is, you know, just what's your business? You know, your business isn't how someone else lives and the decisions that they make. Your business is how you live and the decisions that you make. And that's a rich enough area for you to spend a lot of your time.
Oh, yeah.
Without having to get into the whole mess of what other people do and the decisions they make and how come their life is so great. It doesn't have to be your business. It isn't your business.
Yeah.
So your book is Do a Day. What is, if people are listening to this and thinking, all right, I want to do a day today, where can they start?
So assuming they've done the work on the self-love, they know what their motivation is. And I walk through those things in the book. So I'm not just like, open the book and you're ready to go. Then it's about goal setting. And we talked a bit about this, but it's, what is it you're actually trying to achieve? And then it's literally about every day you wake up and you do something purposeful and proactive in support of that goal. So for me, that starting that July 1st, I was about 45 pounds overweight. It was July 1st. As I said, I wanted to lose the 45 pounds. It was like 42 pounds or something by the end of the year. So that's a significant amount of weight. it's not 5 pounds. I don't know how you actually lose 5 pounds on purpose. Like, it's not enough weight that you can really craft something specific, or you just, you know, don't eat for a day and there you're done. So 40 pounds is real, or 45, whatever. There are things I'm going to have to do in terms of my diet, my exercise, the way I'm thinking and feeling. I knew I had to work on myself if I expected those numbers to move and to stay where I wanted them to be. And then it's, you know, every day I woke up and I said, today I'm going to work out and I've got a goal. So I'm going to work out with purpose. I'm going to do that interval training. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to record my progress. I'm going to write down what I did. I'm going to weigh myself. And, you know, there's people who say you shouldn't weigh yourself every day. This is specific to the weight loss thing. So that's not relevant for every goal. But I do think having a goal and tracking your progress against it is important for keeping yourself aligned to what your progress is and whether you need to adjust up or down. That direction and purpose did so much more than I even thought it would, because I was a little bit nervous about the end of the year thing, and I posted it on Facebook. So I put some social pressure out there, like people were expecting something, and I was trying to get to 185 pounds by the end of the year, and I didn't get to 185 by the end of the year. I got to 180 by my birthday in October. So, and I surprised myself, like I was nervous that this was biting off a little too much to chew, given, you know, my wife's situation, work, a whole number of other things. But the positivity was such a fuel, and I had my eyes on that direction. And I don't think you can change one little aspect of your life and expect it all to work out. I do think you need to look at what's not working the way you want it to. Where are you not heading that you wish you were? Push everything there. And then every day, you're doing those actions that bring you forward. So that's why I got to my goal early. And since then, so we just passed, I just had my birthday again. So we've just passed the 6 year mark since that day. I've basically been 180 the whole time. There was a period during marathon training where I got into the 160s, because as a vegan, it takes a lot of lettuce to put back on the calories you burn during some of those long runs. But I've been 175 to 185 pretty consistently for 6 years. And that's because my life is different. I always say, like, I spent the first half of my life overweight and the second half trying not to be. That's done. I'm not trying not to be overweight. I'm just living the life that I want to live. And my weight, my health, all those things come along for the ride in just the right balance. So it's every day I get up, I do specific things in support of the life I'm trying to live. It doesn't matter if I failed yesterday. It doesn't matter if I'll fail tomorrow, because today I'm going to do better. And that's, at its heart, that's what Do A Day is. And that's how you achieve.
That is really beautiful. And I think that this, when you have behind you this sense of direction and this sense of purpose, you don't have to rely on willpower, and it's so easy to fall out of a habit, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
A habit that's quite tough, like training every day or something like that, but you don't when you're driven by something that comes from deep inside.
Yeah, completely.
Well, thank you, Brian. Thank you so much for talking to me today and talking to our listeners. I'm sure they've got tons and tons to take away from today.
I hope so. I did. So not to be selfish, but I love this. This is a great conversation. I think we really hit on these deep emotional things that people need to hear and think about for themselves. So I'm so pleased to have been on your show.
I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you got something really valuable out of it and maybe had the opportunity to look in on yourself and ask yourself what do-a-days you need to be doing right now. You can get hold of Brian's book at www.doadaybook.com/Amazon and www.doadaybook.com/Amazon UK. That's it for today. Next week, Ivy and I are in Mexico. It's our first world schooling adventure. We're there for about 10 days. And I'm actually hoping to bring you a show recorded from there, or certainly edited from there, next week. So that's something a bit different from me. We're going international. Punks and Suits is going international. But for now, with information about how to stay in touch with us here, here's the lovely Ivy Palmer.
We'd love to hear from you. You can stay in touch with us on Twitter at Blair Palmer, by email blair@thatpeoplething.com, and our newly renamed Instagram account, which is now called A Brilliant Gamble. And if you go to the website www.thatpeoplething.com, you can sign up for our newsletter. You'll get articles, tips, and provocative questions straight to your inbox. And a free exclusive 5-part series written by Mummy, covering the main themes of Parks and Soup's concept and revealing her dirty little secret. Ooh. Hug!